Hello, everyone, and welcome to Oh, a Podcast, the podcast about playing games and making games, brought to you by O-Rock Studios. I'm Paul Franson, the head boy of O-Rock.
And I'm Michael Gray, the head writer of O-Rock.
How are we doing this month, Michael?
I think we're doing fine. Is this the March podcast or the April podcast?
March. This will be going up at the end of March.
All right. So it's a happy March, I suppose.
Yeah. Yep. No April Fool's Day jokes from us, I'm sorry to say. Unless we want to try to spring one on them right now.
I don't know. That was one of the questions we had, was there a good, like, video game April Fool's Day joke?
It was, and, yeah. We'll be getting to that later in this episode.
Aw, we can't start with questions.
Whoa, wait, maybe that can be our big April Fool's Day thing. We do it topsy-turvy. First we do questions, and then we talk about what we're playing, and then if there's time, we'll talk about games that we're working on.
Because how about that? We always follow a very set schedule. That's not even the right word.
Itinerary?
Itinerary.
So, been working on any games lately?
I don't know. I was thinking to myself earlier today that it would be weird to complain about buying movie tickets, because I think it's a pain when you like try to buy a movie ticket online and they charge like a 20% convenience fee.
Yes.
But if you buy the ticket in person, they don't charge you the 20% convenience fee.
Huh. I mean, my gut wants to say, well, obviously that's because it's so much more convenient to buy it on your phone, but is it actually?
I'm not sure. Like, I tried looking up a couple of websites to see what's up with that, but I don't know. They were just spouting lines. It sounded like they were spouting lines from credit card companies or movie companies, whatever, totally justifying it. Mm-hmm.
I always get them online, but that's because I'm always scared that I'm going to get there and then the movie theater will somehow be full, despite the fact that there has not been a full movie theater since about 2009 or so. Certainly not around here. I went to see a movie a few weeks ago, Saturday afternoon, and there was literally two other people in there. I probably did not have to pay the extra $3 to buy that ticket online.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, the official explanation is something about credit card vendors charging an extra 20% per transaction, but it doesn't seem to me like the credit card vendors would stop charging extra for credit card transactions in person.
That's sort of the thing with credit cards, right, is that I believe the way they work for almost all purchases is that they charge a fee. So, I mean, the movie theater's paying that fee no matter... That fee exists no matter what, unless you go to the movie theater and buy with cash, I guess. But I don't know how many people necessarily are doing that. Maybe more than I think.
Well, they're not offering you a discount if you're buying in cash, so...
Yeah, that's the way they should do it. That would be awesome. I mean, they don't even have to change anything. They just say that instead of including a convenience charge, say that that's the default price. But if you pay in cash, you get a $2 discount. Just sort of reframe it.
Maybe that's what matinees are about. Matinees, because isn't that the idea? Yeah. Is matinee, you visit in the morning and they give you a $2 discount. Maybe that's where it really comes from. Huh. Interesting. Yeah. Anyway, video games.
Wait, now I'm trying to figure out where you even go to buy a ticket at the movie theater. Because, like, so at my one at my almost completely dead mall that I believe I've mentioned before, like, the front booth, I have not seen anyone working in the front booth in years. Do I buy a ticket at the concession stand? Is that how it's supposed to work now?
Yeah, that's how I've seen it. I've seen it where, the leftmost concession stand is the one that sells tickets. I've also seen it where, okay, they only have the one concession stand, so that's the person you go to.
Yeah, okay. Wow, apparently that's how long it's been since I tried to buy a ticket in person, but I do not even know how to do it anymore.
Do they still have the person that rips the ticket and says theater number 6 on your left?
Ours has, well, they scan the QR code in my email and then say it's to the theater on your left or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, because otherwise, what, you could just walk in at that point.
Mm-hmm.
They must still have the ticket ATM machines that they used to have, right? Like, before online ticket became a huge thing, you would go to, like, the little kiosk to buy your ticket. Those must still exist. I haven't looked for them in a bit. Maybe that's how you do it, if you don't want to go to the concession stand.
So, I haven't heard of this. It's basically like a self-serve ticket purchase machine.
Yeah. Oh, you guys don't have that? Or haven't had that?
There's something similar at the One Mall, but I feel like... This is silly to say. I feel like that's what the person at the concession stands is basically using that ATM ticket dispenser machine to get the tickets to you.
They just wheeled it behind the counter. Yeah. That's fun. I'll have to check. You know what? I think I'm going to run an experiment next time I go to the movie theater. I'm not going to get my ticket in advance and watch. That's going to be the one time that the movie theater is actually sold out at 1 in the afternoon on a Saturday.
Be so sad.
It would be, yeah. All right, so you were about to talk about video games before I made us talk about movie theaters again. Was there something you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. So no, actually, I was also wondering about play theaters or like Ticketmaster,
of course, yes,
and Concert, and those guys, they do the same thing. They charge like the 20% convenience fee when you buy a ticket. But I don't know where you can get a ticket besides using, you know, like Ticketmaster.
Right.
And it's not like the movie theater where there's a box office. I don't even know if that's the term, but I don't know where I could buy a concert ticket in person. Like, if I showed up at the arena...
I feel like those are more likely to be packed, too, right? Like, I feel like if I'm going to a play or a concert or whatever, like, I would be even more afraid to just leave it up to chance that I would be able to buy a ticket at the window.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, do they even still have the window where you can buy tickets?
Does the window even exist? That is a great... Actually, this is reminding me, we went to one of these... at the end of last year, it's a stage theater. They actually also have a movie screen that they can roll out to or roll down. So they were actually doing a theater showing of Home Alone, which was awesome. This was really weird. We bought our ticket online, but then we had to go into a separate room, like a separate entrance in the theater, to go talk to a guy. He scanned our ticket and then scanned the QR code and then gave us a physical ticket, and then we had to go outside, go back in through the other entrance, and then hand someone our ticket. But that is like a historic old theater that has sort of been retrofitted for this stuff, so
that is
not
will
call
standard, what they call it, right?
Yeah,
tickets are waiting for your will call. Why is that still a thing?
Yeah, that
don't
was
people
weird.
Have phones these days?
Like, why couldn't the person who took my ticket when I walked into the theater, couldn't they have been the one scanning my phone and sort of saved the step?
They who could have just say? Let you in through the door into the theater.
it was very odd. Also, the movie screen was not particularly high quality either. It was pretty cool getting to see Home Alone in a theater, but it was not the high defest version of that film that one might be able to see.
Yeah, that was something I noticed when I went to the movie theater too, was I don't know how often they clean those movie screens. My guess is not often.
Have you ever had to like go back out of the movie theater and complain to someone because there was an issue with the screen? Or with the audio or anything like that?
No.
I remember vividly that happened when I was watching one of the Marvel movies. There was like, the screen was all tinted green. it was not the Incredible Hulk movie. It was just all tinted green. And there was like 50 people in the theater. And I kept waiting. I'm like, come on, someone's going to say something, right? Someone, this is just going to get fixed. And no, it did not. And I had to go out to like the concession stand and be like, The screen's green. Can someone fix the green, please?
What would even be the reason for that? I guess they're still using projectors in some of those old theaters.
I'm picturing like an AV cable isn't plugged in all the way or something.
That's probably more likely, yeah.
Like on a Super Nintendo or whatever, you like forget to plug in one of the red or yellow cables and the screen is slightly messed up.
Yeah, really they should just have the theater screen basically just be a giant like TV screen. Really, because they make really large TV screens these days, don't they? Yeah.
So back to the important question. How, my weird theater aside, how do you go into a theater and buy a ticket? A stage theater. Is it really like, do other theaters still have like the will call window room thing that mine had? Or do they even still allow that? Is it just assumed that you're buying it online? And if that's the case, then why are they charging a convenience fee when there is, in fact, no other option?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Our April Fool's joke should have been that we actually talk about video games for the full hour.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, I can't tell. You can call the box office to find out about group rates. So I wonder if that means I can call the box office and they can purchase the ticket. Like, I can buy the ticket from them instead of the going through a middle person.
Sure. So you're, like, calling someone over the phone and, like, giving them your credit card information and all that, and then they have the ticket waiting for you at the window or whatever? Or maybe they email
the ticket to you, maybe.
Yeah.
In that case, that's probably the same thing of, like, they're just using the Ticketmaster website or the...
Yeah.
The ticket dispensing ATM for you.
I'm still really tickled by the idea that they just wheeled the little kiosk behind the concessions bar for people to, so the employees can push the buttons for you.
I mean, I'm sure it's one of those things where it's maybe not the literal ATM, but probably the exact same program, so.
Yeah, sure. Okay, now should we talk about video games?
I guess we can, if we've exhausted the theater topics.
Oh, have we? Have we not?
What are the best video game movies? Because I know the Dungeons & Dragons movie is coming out, and that's video game themed, right?
Yeah.
There's also a Super Mario Brothers movie coming out. I know nothing about these movies besides the fact that they're coming out.
I'm scared of both of them, and I don't think I'm going to watch either of them.
Oh.
I don't know, this I feel like I'm always like this when there's a movie, maybe I've talked about this before, when there's a TV show or a movie that's about something I'm genuinely interested in or know a lot about, like, I know every time going into it, I'm just going to spend the whole movie being frustrated about small details that they get wrong about everything. So I feel like I'm going to be the one watching the D&D movie and be like, hey, that's not how the fireball spell works. It's supposed to burn everything in a whatever foot radius, as long as it's flammable. And look, that fire touched a carpet and it didn't completely burn up. This movie sucks. Well, I feel like that's what would happen.
It feels like that last complaint would be something that anybody could have, even if they have nothing about D&D.
That's true. That wasn't perhaps the best example.
It's okay. It looks like it has a large cast, the D&D movie. It looked like they had seven or eight people. That's a large group playing D&D, I suppose.
That is, yeah. Hard to keep to wrangle all those people.
Yeah. Is the movie going to have a framing device? If it starts with like eight people sitting down to play D&D and then the rest of the movie is just like 2 hours of their actual game being played out.
That's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I haven't heard anything about that.
Yeah, me neither.
And with the Mario movie, I'm just... I have the same basic complaint that all nerds have, which is that Mario doesn't sound like Mario.
They've had the same guy playing Mario for the 90s, and he's still doing stuff. Like, he played one of the villains in the Dragon Ball Z movie that came out last year, and he did a perfectly fine job.
So that's something I was wondering, is, like, whether he's, like, you know, I mean, this sounds mean, but I wasn't like sure if he's actually an actor. Like, there's a difference between saying a bunch of like isolated lines and giving like an maybe the Mario movie doesn't need an emotional performance, but I don't know what I'm trying to say. I would imagine it's a different skill set providing snippets of dialogue versus playing a character for a whole 2 hour long movie.
Yeah, that's something that I've been not so happy about with some of the Mario games, is they purposely try to have Mario say as little as possible. He's limited to saying snippets like wahoo and, you know, let's go.
Yeah.
Whereas it feels like you could just crank out all of Mario's dialogue in like 10 minutes for all of like the 3D Mario games.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. That's why I was wondering if maybe it was a decision not just because they wanted the celebrity status of Chris Pratt, but because maybe the voice actor, it wasn't something that was within his skill set or interest. That said, I don't even think of the 3D Mario guy as Mario's voice. I still think of Captain Lou Albano from the old cartoon. Which is also a completely different voice. So he doesn't sound like any of my Marios.
Yeah, it looks like the guy who plays Mario has been in a bunch of movies. Oh, it's an Anastasia.
I was probably just totally wrong. Really? All right, never mind. I was just completely wrong.
Well, uncredited roles though, so that's sad.
But he's done more than Wahoo.
He's done more than Wahoo. Let's see, it looks like he's officially hired to play Mario in 1994, but most people didn't hear him as Mario until Mario 64. So that's just one of those weird facts, is that it's like, oh, this guy's been playing Mario for 2 years already. Now, granted, he was only doing Mario for like two previous games, but, you know, 64 was not his debut.
What games did he do before?
Mario Teaches Typing and Mario's Game Gallery.
Wow! Oh, that's so cool. I didn't know that.
He's also William Shakespeare in Carmen Sandiego's Great Chase Through Time.
Wow. He has so much more range than I ever thought. And I imagine neither of us are saying his name because we're both afraid to pronounce it wrong. I want to say Charles Martinet, but I don't know if that's correct.
Oh, you're right. That's probably French. Oh, yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah. Charles Clarinet. So, yeah, I don't know. Are you planning to see either of these movies, Mario or D&D, when they come out?
I have absolutely no idea. Probably not. I'm sure my kid would love to see it, yeah.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, the Mario movie sounds like it would be good to take some children to.
Mm-hmm.
Have I already asked you before if you've played D&D before? I mean, outside of like the role-playing games from the Game Cola podcast.
Not really.
Oh.
Yeah, I think the Game Cola RPG, or what? Yeah, I've done those, and then I did one session, but the guy lived like an hour away, so I didn't come back for another one.
Right. So I remember you were the DM or whatever the language they used was for when Game Cola did the Maid RPG. Was that your first time like doing any of this kind of thing? Any of these kind of role-playing games?
Yeah, because I met... Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, because I met the guy who translated the Maid RPG or whatever, and that's how I knew it. I went to a gaming thing. I think we played Settlers of Catan or something like that. So I did that for like 3 weeks. But again, it was like 20, 25 minutes away from my house. I didn't keep going back.
Oh. Well, I'm surprised and impressed, because I remember thinking at the time you did a really good job as the DM for that. That's incredible that was your first time.
He made it seem very easy, so I guess I could say I learned from the best.
That's true. I guess if you're learning from the guy who made the game.
Yeah, I seem to recall him saying something along the lines of, like, you know, I've done hundreds of these, so of course it's easy. He's got it memorized.
So I think I mentioned before that I'm DMing a campaign for a couple of my friends, a D&D campaign, very loosely based on Secret of Mana. And it's so hard. I never know how much or how little to plan, and I always end up doing way too much. Like, I'm embarrassed to say what my word count is for my notes, and I'm not even totally finished yet. For the next session, my word count is in over 10,000 words. And I don't know how to not do that.
It's difficult. I mean, that's part of the reason why I can't write RPGs, I think. I don't know how to handle all those pathways or stuff like that.
That's exactly it, yeah. Because I think coming from a game developer background, especially, like, I just get caught in so many, like, I literally write them as if-then statements in my notes, and I just get caught, like, going down so many rabbit holes where it's like, well, okay, if they get to the dragon first, here's what happens. If the bandits get to the dragon first, here's what happens. If they kill the bandits during the dragon fight, this happens. If the bandits survive and the dragon baby is still there, like, it's like 800 different permutations, and I feel like I have to come up with detailed notes for each one, and I'm sure in reality I could just, like, do all of that on the fly, but it doesn't feel like that when I'm prepping. When I'm prepping, it feels like I have to have everything ready to go, or else it's going to be a disaster.
I also have a similar problem, or I don't know if it's similar or different, but I can't figure out the in-between things. It's like, okay, well, if they die in the battle, or if they live in the battle, it's like, I don't know how to do it. It's like, what if they're only slightly hurt in the battle? I'm stuck.
I leave it to them to not die, basically. Although one DM trick, I mean, specifically for like a tabletop role playing game, not a video game, but one trick I've seen people use as the DM, you can just lie. Like, if people are having a lot of trouble with the battle, you can just, you know, surreptitiously knock half of the bad guy's hit points off, and now all of a sudden they're doing well instead of about to lose.
Aw, that's so nice.
Or, similarly, if it's going too well, add hit points. Or just say, oh, wow, you hit it for 18 damage, and then not write that down.
Wow. I wonder if there are video games like that which will automatically adjust themselves like that. I don't think that happens.
Maybe.
I think in video games, they usually have a set level of difficulty for the bosses and stuff. Like, no matter who's playing, Bowser has the same number of hit points on level 3. I don't know.
Yeah. I remember reading about some game where, I think it was like a first-person shooter, and it was like, the first time an enemy would bring you down to 0 hit points, it only brings you down to 1 hit point instead. Like, so that it gives you a little buffer there to try to get out. Like, there was some game that did something to that effect.
Hmm. I know one joke I heard from, I think it was just a meme I saw posted a couple of times with the D&D movie, is that they need to kill off one of the characters, and then they immediately meet another character played by the exact same actor who fills a similar role.
Okay. See, if the movie's like that, then I will probably want to watch it. If it's playing off, like, real life tropes from, you know, the actual act of playing the game, I think that would be really entertaining. But if it's just like a fantasy story that uses names and places and spells from the lore of D&D, that doesn't really interest me as much.
Yeah, but it feels like that's sort of the problem. If they want to appeal to a mainstream audience, they'd probably want to go that route, yeah, as opposed to, tackling famous D&D sessions, whatever those may be.
See, and hence why I'm not super interested in the film, but, you know, I guess we'll see what people say about it.
Yeah, I'll just have to wait for the reviews to come out. Yeah.
Yeah. And then if it's good, I can test some of these new ideas for how to buy movie tickets. See if I can go to the kiosk or the concession stand and save my $2 convenience fee and use that to put towards my $10 popcorn.
Yes.
All right. Video games.
So with video games.
Yes.
I believe two nights ago I wrote like 6 pages of Pathway 3 of the superhero game. So that's something I did. I don't know how good it is. I'll have to go. I'm sure I'm going to have to go back and edit it because it doesn't match what was in the outline at all. Don't want to go into too much spoiler territory there, but we're supposed to like meet the main villain before the end of chapter number one. And it's like, I wrote 6 pages. They're not even on the plane to go meet the main villain. These are specifically being sent out of state to, you know, go undercover in this villain's secret lair. And, yeah, they're not even on the plane yet. They were just talking a bit too much, I suppose. And then the one character who's supposed to, like, just serve as, like, sort of a transition introductory character somehow managed to stay for 3 pages, even though it's like, no! You're supposed to pass the torch on to the real mentor, the person who's in all the in the rest of the pathway, and then just leave. So, I'm going to have to do some rewriting there.
Oh, your characters just wouldn't stop talking.
Yeah, I mean, that character appears more in Pathway 4, so, you know, it's like, just save it for then, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, if it works, maybe you could just, if there's you know, dialogue there you want to hang on to, maybe you can just crop it out and move it to chapter 4, and then hey, part of chapter 4 is already written.
I meant pathway 4. Pathway 4 is where that.
Pathway 4. I'm sorry.
Up.
Well, same thing. Same idea.
Same thing. Yeah, but like I said, that's hence my complaint. It's like this character's not going to show up ever again in this pathway. So let's see, we have an official title for the Moms game, or was that previous month?
No, I was looking at my notes for last month. We hadn't, I think we, last month was when we were talking about some of the weird names that the chatbot had given us, but we hadn't settled yet. So we have settled now.
Oh, did we want to announce it?
No, I think we should just have another 10-second awkward pause, if that's okay.
Let's do it. Okay.
Okay. So we actually took the four names that we liked the most, and I think you consulted with your wife, too, which was helpful. And we did a Twitter poll on the Oarak Twitter account. And the winner, I believe... The winner by far, if I remember correctly, was Co-Author Crush. So Co-Author Crush is the official name of what we've been calling the Mom's Game.
No, if everybody That's loves it, picked, everybody right? loves it. Let's stick with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I still wish the name was somehow reflective of the mom element of the game, but I can't deny that it is a good, catchy-sounding name. It's alliterative, it sounds interesting, it gets the romance part across, so can't complain.
I'm looking up here, because I did write a trailer for Co-Author Crush forever and a day ago. I guess you renamed everything Co-Author Crush, that's nice of you.
I did, yes. Yeah, I thought that would, mainly so I could remember what the name was, remember which one we settled on.
So I'm looking at in June... Got to take the placeholder title out of there and replace it with Co-Author Crush in the actual text file.
I didn't change anything in the actual document.
Yeah, the trailer does focus on the writing aspect, too, so that works.
Okay.
Like, the mom aspect was the final, like, punch to the trailer, so...
Okay, all right. Yeah, I mean, we'll still get there. And we can make sure to include it in the store page description. Yeah.
I think I haven't done a whole lot with the Co-Author Crush. I think mostly I've just been playing around with the artwork, changing some of the, the AI-generated art.
I was just going to say, I was actually really impressed with some of the ideas and some of the stuff you've been doing with the character art. We might have talked about this before, one of the complications with using AI art generators to create the character models is that we can't really create different poses using that. Like, so far I haven't found an AI art generator that'll like create a character for me and then allow me to say like, okay, make this same character but now make them happy, or make them dancing, or make them holding up a peace sign. Like, it's just not something that I am currently able to do. So I was really happy with how you were able to use the art that we have and come up with pretty creative ideas to create different views for some of these characters. Like the knight character, I really like that, where he has those gigantic eyebrows kind of sticking out of his helmet. and when he changes his expression, his eyebrows move. And I thought that was really cool. Or your idea with the alien, how the alien's color can just change with the emotion that that character is expressing on a given line. I thought that was a very clever idea and a very simple idea to execute.
Yeah, I was trying to think of simple ideas to execute. Yeah.
Yeah, that was great.
So I'm going to continue that. I think I might want to do another expression for the waiter character before moving in.
Sure.
On doing more with the alien. I did mess around a bit with the waiter, with the waiter's little dancing thing.
The dancing thing is so fun. How did you figure out the code to make the waiter dance? Is that something you'd found online, or how did you come up with that?
I'd have to look at the code. Give me a couple of seconds. I think it was probably something I first found online, but then messed around with. Because it's no. It's just loop, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's something like show character at 20.25, which is 25% of the way through the screen with move. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, okay, show the character at 50%, then 40%, then 60%, and then loop it.
It's another great, clever way to have the character still doing something, still changing in some way without necessarily having to somehow make the character, pose differently in ways that we are not really able to make him do. Oh, instead of doing that, you can have him dance around the screen a little bit, and I think it sort of functions in the same way. It's really cool.
Yeah, no, I had to look up the thing on the tutorial with RenPy about making a character move across the screen. I'm still not sure how that works, because I thought it was, as I just explained, like point, 0.5 means it goes to the halfway point of the screen. 0.25 means it goes 25% of the way of the screen. But when I tried that out, the character barely moved. And so with the second dance, now the character is going to -4.9 to -4.75, then back to -4.9. I don't know why it's like -4 to get the character to move right a conceivable amount. I don't know what the -4 refers to. I just know that's how it works. And it's
so
took a lot of
guess I wonder
and check.
If these numbers are in relation to the waiter's current position. So I think minus is to the left, and then a positive number would be toward the right. Maybe no, because these are all minuses, so that would suggest that he was only moving to the left, and that's not true. So
yeah,
never mind.
Yeah, I think I think your explanation is probably part of the reason why. Because
I think I'm close.
The second time the waiter appears, there's another character on screen, whereas the first time the waiter was the only character and
right.
was like dead center. So I think maybe then it actually worked to say 0.25 was 25% of the way. But I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. Anyway, it looks fun. It's cool.
Yep. And then I'll be working more. Well, hopefully I'll finish that first pathway with get all the art done for the first pathway. Hooray.
Yeah.
And then move on to the next one.
Yep. I'm close to wrapping up my part in the second pathway. I think I'm in the endings now, but I've been sidelined for the last couple weeks because I got a big proofreading contract that has been taking up more of my time than originally anticipated, which is a shame because I was actually moving quite quickly, I thought, through a lot of this. This pathway has been pretty convenient for me personally because it's mostly... this sounds like I'm about to describe what visual novels are in general, but it's mostly like these kind of long conversations between the main character and the mom of this pathway. So there isn't a lot of, like, having to change music cues or add sound effects or anything like that, because it's mostly just this one-on-one conversation. So that makes it a lot less for me to do than there have been in some of the other pathways. I did do some fun things with some of the puzzles, though. I don't know if you've seen it yet. There's the puzzles where, like... Oh, like the map one, right? You're given a series of directions to follow on the map, and you're trying to figure out what location you're supposed to go to. I was able to arrange things on the screen so that you have the map on the left-hand side of the screen and then your options on the right-hand side of the screen. Previously, we had it so that you had to click a button to show a map, the map again. It would only show either the map or the options, but now I have it so you can see both at the same time, which I think should make things a little easier for people.
I feel like that's what we did.
They don't have to click back and forth.
Did in like those early Francie Drew games.
Yeah, well, I was excited because I specifically found code that lets you temporarily move where the choices menu appears on the screen. Like, by default, it just shows in the direct center of the screen, but there's ways you can say, okay, right now, I want it to appear on the right-hand side of the screen at this specific height. I think it all looks quite nice. And same thing with there was another puzzle in the game that was earlier in that pathway that was something similar. The checklist for what the doctor does after a baby is born, all the things the doctor checks. I was able to similarly have the notes for that, the rules you're supposed to follow on the left-hand side of the screen, and then the options, the things you're clicking on the right-hand side of the screen. So again, you don't have to click between the two. Everything's just visible all at once.
It's always nice, yeah.
I was quite happy to figure all that out. That was all earlier in the month. Like I said, later in the month, my time all got sucked away.
I'll just be working on the artwork whenever I get a chance. I'm busy too, so.
No worries. We're getting stuff done. We're making good progress. Similarly with Cat President 3, we're on the second round of revisions for the script now. I, again, had been making pretty good progress. I'm also almost done the second pathway of that game. But again, I got sidelined. But that's been going quite quickly, as it usually does in the second round. By then, we've worked out most of the kinks, and it's just kind of refining the language in some spots.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going pretty quickly. Plenty good games recently? As we always do, Michael, this is the part of the episode where we talk about the games that we've been playing, according to our itinerary.
I would make a complaint about Awakening Moonfell Wood Remastered, which is the hint button is not useful during jigsaw puzzles. This game has way too many jigsaw puzzles, I think over 20 of them. But in the original game, if you press the hint button during a jigsaw puzzle, it throws one of the pieces into the correct spot for you. In the remastered version, that is not the case.
Huh.
So that just makes the jigsaw puzzles just harder in the remastered version. Yeah, the hint button does nothing during the jigsaw puzzles.
It does nothing, okay.
Yeah. It's there, you can click it, and then the hint character says, sorry, I can't help you right now.
Like, oh my god, it doesn't even like wiggle the edge pieces that you haven't put in yet. So, oh, good. Okay, that'll help. It does nothing.
No,
okay.
No. It just does nothing. And so that would be a complaint I have with the remake versus the original.
That's interesting. I wonder why that decision was made. Maybe they were using some sort of new engine in the remake, and for whatever reason, the engine was not compatible with the trick they had used in the original version.
The programming was just,
and
they
were just
difficult.
Like, it's too much work to figure this out. And who needs help with a jigsaw puzzle anyway?
Yeah. I feel like it's the case that they probably, like, nobody who worked on the original game worked on the remake.
Mm.
I think it's been too long. The company's had changes because they stopped making adventure games for, like, 6 or 7 or 8 years. This is their first, like, dipping their toe back into adventure games, which is just remaking their old ones. And so I don't know if that's the company is going back to making adventure games, or it's just this is just the one project they're doing to make more money on their old content. And everything else is just going to be hidden objects games. Other games I played the second and third Freddy Fish games. Did walkthroughs for that for my YouTube channel. So that's fun.
I'm glad you enjoy them. I know Elizabeth, growing up, she was a big fan of the Pajama Sam games, but when she got to Freddy Fish, she was always very disappointed in them. So I'm glad to hear you enjoyed them.
They're vaguely enjoyable. I mean, I wouldn't, like, play favorites with any of these games, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Pajama Sam was pretty fun, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that game rules. I mean, that whole series rules.
Oh, have you played the fourth one, which was made by, like, a totally different company, and you can kind of tell? It's very sad.
I recently finished playing Psychonauts 2. I think that was in the last month. It was fun. I'm starting to think I'm just not really that interested in the 3D run around and collect stuff kind of games. Like, I definitely kept finding myself, like, not really exploring like the game wants me to, because I tend to be very goal oriented when I play a game. It's like, okay, I have my mission, I want to go do it. I do not really care to search this area and find all of the hidden whatevers. I just want to go to the next level, beat the next level, go to the level after that, beat that level. So I think in that respect, the game probably was not made for me.
Yeah. I have heard of Psychonauts. I've never played it. I think somebody wanted to, like, commission me to play it, and they offered, like, okay, well, I'll give you, like, $15 to play this game. And it's like, is this, like, a 50-hour game or something? And it's on a system I don't have? Yeah.
Well, what is cool about Psychonauts 2 is that it has a lot of, like, I think they call them accessibility features, even that make the game easier, or can make the game easier. So, like, you can just turn on invincibility, or you can turn on, like, you do more damage when you hit enemies. And that was another thing that I started messing with as I was getting into the game, because I just really wanted to see the story play out and hang out with the characters, and I didn't really care about dying. I disliked dying significantly. I did sort of like that. I like that concept in games. All these various options and sliders you can play with to have the game tailor more to what you want out of it. I think that's kind of a cool concept.
Yeah, I wish we could do that. I think we're doing that in the co-author Crush with we have a skip puzzle button for the people who really don't care about puzzles.
And they actually work, unlike the hint button in the game you were just talking about.
Yeah, they actually skip you to the end of the puzzle. I mean, okay, those jigsaw puzzles do have, like, a skip button, but still.
Oh, they do, okay. And we did have a hint button in a few parts of the Lost Oregon City Gold, too. Like the
top of
the
screen,
sequence.
That one maze that nobody could find, yeah. Yeah, it looks like it's a 15-hour game, but... Mm.
I finished it at the beginning of the month, so I don't really remember it that well anymore.
Well, more like twice as long if you're trying to do everything, like you said, get, like, full completion, find all the collectibles and such.
Which I would never ever do. Yeah, it wasn't that long the way I was playing it.
Interesting. So it's made by a Double Fine. So I guess that must, well, if it's Psychonauts 2, there must be a Psychonauts 1.
Yeah, it came out a while ago. Like, I want to say, like, 2004, 2005, somewhere around there. It was a long time before this game came out. And it actually, this game takes place, like, days after the first one, too. Which is wild, considering the real-life time gap between the two games. It's kind of funny to me. But yeah, I haven't been doing a lot of gaming other than that. I guess I have been playing the English translation of Live Alive or Live Alive or whatever, or however you pronounce that. I played that game totally wrong, apparently, because it's one where there's, what, like, six or seven different stories that you go through, and then they all come together in the end. But you can play the individual stories in any order, so I picked the wrestling one first, because I was like, wow, wrestling, that's awesome. And there was no story or anything in that one. You literally just fight six wrestlers and then it's over. Like, there was nothing to that one. There was almost no dialogue or anything explaining what's going on or setting any sort of story, no lore. It's just, here's a bunch of wrestlers. Some of them kind of look like Hulk Hogan. That's pretty cool. But then the second one I did was set in the near future. And the bad guys, they were turning people into liquid. So that was fun. Liquefied humans, I believe, were a major plot point in that pathway. And in the end, we ended up at this pond or a pool or something that was just filled with all these liquefied humans mixed together. And then I had to fight it. This is a very strange game. I can kind of see why it took them so long to bring it to the U.S. I'm also not sure that the fan translation version that I am playing is perhaps the best translation. Also, my friend in the game, Turtle, was sick, and the way we healed them was turning them into a liquid turtle and pouring the liquid into a robot.
Wait, what?
It's a very... I'm going to commission you to play this. I think you would love it. I don't understand what's going on in this game.
Live Alive is okay. 1994, okay.
All right, let's get to listener questions. This one comes to us from Timothy Mark over on the O Arak Studios Discord. Timothy asks, how do you motivate yourself when things get hard? This question obviously only applies if things do get hard for you guys, but I am currently finding quite hard to work on my own game, and I'm kind of hoping you have some advice. Kind of a vague question, but I hope you get it, haha.
I hope we have some helpful answers.
Yeah.
With the co-author crush and such, it feels like, well, since I can only work on it usually for an hour a day at most, that seems to be more of a problem than anything else. You know, I feel guilty if I haven't, like, done it for, like, 4 or 5 days in a row.
Mm. That's interesting. So maybe working with another person would motivate you in the sense that you feel guilty if you're not, like, doing your part of the project. Like, you might be letting
Paul's
the other
on the
person
second
down.
Pathway. You're on the second pathway of co-author crush, and I'm still dinking around with the first pathway.
Hey!
Guess who looks bad?
Nothing to worry about, like I said, because I haven't touched the game in, like, a week and a half now because of this stuff I'm working on, so...
Yeah, and it's like, I still haven't caught up, even though you did literally nothing.
Don't
like,
worry
oh
about it. You're doing fine. But yeah, but maybe there's something to that, though. Maybe, like, finding, like, isn't that a thing with, like, an accountability buddy? Maybe Timothy needs an accountability buddy, either someone he's actually working with on this project, or just someone who he, like, checks in with every week to say, here's what I did this week. And just by virtue of having that person to talk to, maybe that would motivate you to have to get some stuff done so you have something to say to them. Or in our case, it's like, so we have something to talk about the podcast, we really need to have done some work in the past month.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we talk about movie theaters for 30 minutes.
Well, next month we'll talk about why bags of potato chips are only half full instead of all the way full. That's the worst.
The only thing I had noted for Timothy here too is that for me, it helps to keep in mind that game development is essentially my only source of income. So if I'm not doing it, then I don't have any money. So that helps too. So Timothy, I would say, quit your job and find a friend. I think those are the two best pieces of advice that we could give.
I've heard that recommended in the past for a way to get around writer's block. Is it's like, oh, suddenly when that's your only thing to rely on, writer's block tends to go away.
We have another question from Joe Reviewer, also in the Discord. I believe these are the two people we answered questions from last month, too. Joe Reviewer says, and we teased this earlier in the episode, has there ever been a good video game themed/adjacent April Fool's Day joke? And I definitely wanted to throw this one to you, Michael, because I know you've done April Fool's jokes for years on your YouTube channel, and that's certainly video game themed slash adjacent.
Yeah, it used to be really funny to tell the joke. It's like, here's the storyline of the next Nancy Drew game, and then make something just ridiculously silly. But there's like four or five of those videos now. It's like, oh, since they stopped making video games, it's been sad. It looks like there is a TV tropes page of April Fool's Day slash video games, which just has a list of various video game April Fool's Day jokes. Like the Nintendo eShop, they had a picture of villains all over the shop saying the villains have taken over the eShop 1 year. That sounds like fun.
I think there was one where, like, one of the old gaming magazines, like GamePro or EGM or something like that, or maybe it was even Nintendo Power, gave instructions for how to unlock Luigi in Mario 64. Which is pretty fun, because he can't. There's been rumors for years that Luigi is in Mario 64, and he never ever was.
Telltale Games said their next episodic game would be based on Five Nights at Freddy's. Which actually does sound plausible. That probably would have been a good game.
Yeah.
They did a bunch of episodic
horror games.
See,
that's the problem, right?
At the time. Yeah.
That's the problem, is when the April Fool's joke is so cool that people then just get really upset that it's not a real thing you're doing.
Yeah, jumping from Walking Dead to Five Nights at Freddy's is not that far out. Oh,
no.
Man.
No, and their whole business model was making these episodic games based on existing franchises, so it's extremely plausible that that's something they could have been working on. I mean, they made a Minecraft game, for goodness sake. Yeah, I don't know. I've never been a huge April Fool's joke person. This is barely even a prank, let alone an April Fool's prank, but something that I've always appreciated is with the Leisure Suit Larry franchise, game number 4 is called Leisure Suit Larry, The Missing Floppies. And the gag is that game does not exist and has never existed. The series went from 3 to 5, and they always make reference to this mythical fourth game called The Missing Floppies. I've always enjoyed that. I was reading a little bit about this earlier today, and there was a whole like real life reason they wanted to do this. Like the creator had tied up the Leisure Suit Larry series with a nice bow at the end of the third game, and there was just like no logical simple way for them to move into a sequel from where they left off. So they just didn't do game 4. He didn't want to do game 4, so he didn't do game 4. He jumped right to game 5. I think that makes a lot of sense. So, I've always appreciated that running gag that the game 4 does not actually exist.
I just think it's weird when they do, when people, like, pump a bunch of money into doing an April Fool's Day joke.
Mm.
That's always really confusing to me.
I kind of like how ThinkGeek used to do it, where they would, put a bunch of fake products on their website, but then ultimately some of those products would actually get made, probably the ones that people were most excited about. See, that's kind of the way to do that prank, right? Like, you do an April Fool's Day prank, maybe even it's just a way to test the waters, and if you get a billion people responding, man, this should be real, then you actually do that thing. I don't know. O-Rock has never done an April Fool's Day joke that I remember.
You could post something silly on the Twitter account.
Hmm.
Pretend to be Doug from the future. I don't know.
Oh, that's fun.
Doug used his time travel skills to write the script, to steal the script for, I don't know, Cat President 12.
Oh.
Did I mention on the podcast that Proud City Pizza doesn't exist anymore?
My pizza I was gonna, place yeah, that was business. That was in my notes to ask you about. Yeah. Oh, R.I. Pizza. Very disappointing.
Yeah.
Did you get any of the free shelves or whatever that were sitting outside the building?
I don't think those were free. I don't know. They just took the shelves from inside and just put them outside the building. I don't think they were supposed to be for the taking.
Oh. So sad. All right. I think that about does it for this month's episode. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Paul M. Franzen, and Michael is at Arglefumpf, spelled exactly as it sounds. You can check out our games on PC and console, or just visit orock.com for the complete library. Our theme song is by Fifth Avenue. You can check them out on SoundCloud. And finally, if you have any questions about game development or about our games specifically, we'd love to hear them. Post them in our official Discord or email them to podcast@orock.com. I don't know why I said official Discord there. There is no unofficial Discord. That would be
is
wild.
Is that a thing
if there
people
was.
Do? I guess.
Yeah. The unofficial fan-created, fan-driven Orock Studios Discord.
I don't think we're that popular. I don't know.
We only have like 30 people in our Discord, so probably not in the official Discord.
Well, they're only in the official Discord, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe, the unofficial one, there's probably like 100 people in there.
That makes sense.
Where they can make fun of us where we can't see it. That's probably what's going on, isn't it? Oh. Is there anything you'd like to add, Michael?
Nah. Have a happy March. April Fool's Day.
Happy April and March and April Fool's Day. Alright, bye everyone!
Bye. A story will be told. Go!
I think that might break things. It did.